Today is Tuesday, January 26th, and you are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, White House begins $1.9 trillion COVID relief talk.
The package includes $1,400 in direct payments to most Americans and $160 billion for vaccine distribution.
Also ahead, President Biden weighs in on Trump impeachment.
President Biden said he didn't think enough Republican senators would vote for impeachment to convict Trump.
Plus, protests rock Netherlands and Australia. These stories and more are next. Our top story today is in the U.S. The White House begins talks with lawmakers on a $1.9 trillion COVID relief package as President Biden faces resistance in his efforts to win bipartisan backing for the first legislative effort of his presidency. AP correspondent Julie Walker reports.
The package includes $1,400 in direct payments to most Americans and $160 billion for vaccine distribution. Many Senate Republicans are worried about the bill's overall price tag. After a bipartisan meeting yesterday, Senator Susan Collins said she'd like to work on a more targeted package. And senators from both parties raised questions about those direct payments to Americans and whether they should be based on need. I'm Julie Walker.
The House impeachment case against Donald Trump has been delivered to the U.S. Senate, which will open its trial against the former president early next month. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn reports.
As is tradition, House prosecutors made a ceremonial walk to the upper chamber to deliver the article of impeachment against Donald Trump. Congressman Jamie Raskin, the lead impeachment manager, reads aloud the charge.
Donald John Trump engaged in high crimes and misdemeanors by inciting violence against the government of the United States.
Citing the deadly incursion at the U.S. Capitol after Trump urged supporters to fight against election certification, falsely claiming fraud. The article suggests Trump is a danger still to the United States.
Thus warrants impeachment and trial, removal from office, and disqualification to hold and enjoy any office.
But GOP senators, some of whom had indicated they would support impeachment, appear to be backing off now. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
President Biden is weighing in on the coming second impeachment trial of former President Trump, set to begin the week of February 8. AP correspondent Julie Walker reports.
President Biden said he didn't think enough Republican senators would vote for impeachment to convict Trump, but told CNN late Monday the trial has to happen, while acknowledging the effect it could have on his agenda, like getting the COVID relief package passed. Biden said there would be a worse effect if it didn't happen. Republicans have been easing off their criticism of the former president and shunning calls to convict him over the deadly siege at the U.S. Capitol, questioning whether Trump's repeated demands to overturn the election really amounted to incitement. I'm Julie Walker.
An increasing number of Republican senators say they are opposed to the impeachment charge against former President Trump. AP correspondent Mike Hempen reports.
The mounting Republican opposition is an indication that many GOP senators will vote to acquit Trump. Democrats would need the support of 17 Republicans to convict him. Arguments in the Senate trial will begin the week of February 8th. Leaders in both parties agreed to the short delay to give Trump's team and House prosecutors time to prepare, and the Senate the chance to confirm some of President Biden's cabinet nominees. Mike Hempen, Washington.
President Joe Biden has reinstated COVID-19 travel restrictions on non-U.S. travelers from Brazil, Ireland, the United Kingdom, and 26 other European countries that allow travel across borders. He also added South Africa to the list because of concerns about the variant of the coronavirus that has spread beyond that nation. Biden has reversed an order from President Trump in his final days in office that called for the relaxation of travel restrictions. Here is White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki.
With the pandemic worsening and more contagious variants spreading, this isn't the time to be lifting restrictions on international travel. And in light of the contagious variant, B1351, South Africa has been added to the restricted list.
Less than a month into Joe Biden's presidency, sweeping changes are underway at the Pentagon as the new U.S. president and new Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin look to undo changes made by former President Trump. VOA National Security Correspondent Jeff Seldon has more.
Well, folks, thank you very much for being here.
Flanked by top military officials, President Joe Biden, with the stroke of a pen, undid one of his predecessor's more divisive policies, a ban on transgender individuals serving in the military.
And what I'm doing is enabling all qualified Americans to serve their country in uniform.
On Twitter, Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin praised the move, calling it not only the right thing, but the smart thing to do. Monday's executive order is just the latest step by the new administration to help the U.S. military change course, since Austin first arrived at the Pentagon this past Friday, making good on a promise the secretary gave lawmakers a week earlier at his confirmation hearing.
We also owe our people a working environment free of discrimination, hate, and harassment. And if confirmed, I will fight hard to stamp out sexual assault and to rid our ranks of racists and extremists.
Already, Austin has issued a memo demanding action against sexual assault. But making progress on the growing problem of extremism, evidenced by the number of former military members who took part in the siege of the U.S. Capitol, may be more difficult.
We've got to get beyond just kind of, you know, screening individuals for potential, neo-Nazi tattoos. It's got to be far more than that. There's got to be greater awareness of what new recruits and active service members are doing online.
Yet Austin is facing down other challenges as well. Having promised to help with the U.S. response to the coronavirus pandemic, he has also been reaching out to key allies. While critical choices loom on what to do next in Iran and Afghanistan, where the number of U.S. troops is down to years-long lows, and in Africa, where the U.S. military footprint has also been shrinking. So, too, there are heightened tensions with Russia, concerns about North Korea, Iran, and then there is China.
I would put China at the top. I see China as the preeminent threat. So in some cases, and American people and our friends around the world need to understand this, the Chinese have fielded systems that are as good or better than ours.
A lengthy to-do list for America's newest Secretary of Defense. Jeff Selden, VOA News, Washington.
This is the Voice of America. Tens of thousands of protesting farmers have driven long lines of tractors into India's capital, breaking through police barricades, defying tear gas, and storming the historic Red Fort as the nation celebrated Republic Day. They waved farm union flags from the ramparts of the fort, where prime ministers annually hoist the national flag to mark the country's independence. Thousands more farmers marched on foot or rode on horseback while shouting slogans against Prime Minister Narendra Modi and legislation he has pushed to modernize farm markets. Allies of jailed Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny are calling for new protests next week to demand his release following a wave of demonstrations across the country in a defiant challenge to President Vladimir Putin. Rallies took place Saturday in more than 100 cities, and observers said they were the largest in years. A human rights group said police detained over 3,700 people. Navalny's supporters urged protesters to keep up the pressure, with rallies called for next Sunday.
This is Science in a Minute.
Despite being a little more than 363,000 kilometers away, the moon exerts its influence on Earth. Most significantly, the tug of the moon's gravity is responsible for the ebb and flow of the Earth's tides. Scientists have found the moon also affects the behavior and physiology of humans and animals. A 2006 study suggests hospital and emergency room admittance are linked with phases of the moon. A new American and Argentinian study published in the journal Science Advances suggests human sleep cycles change over the 29.5-day lunar cycle. They found that several days before a full moon, people go to sleep later in the evening and slumber for shorter periods of time. Study authors also found the same results among people who live in urban and rural areas and whether or not they had access to electricity. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Police arrested more than 150 people after rioting broke out for a third night around the Netherlands on Monday. The unrest started over the weekend after the government imposed a nighttime curfew on Saturday aimed at curbing the spread of COVID-19. Flora Bradley Watson of Reuters reports.
Police in the Netherlands arrested at least 70 people on Monday after riots broke out across the country for a third night in a row. In Rotterdam, anti-lockdown demonstrators started fires and clashed with police in protest of a new nighttime curfew. There were similar scenes in Amsterdam, as well as the smaller centres of Haarlem, Gillian and Den Bosch. The 9 p.m. to 4:30 a.m. curfew came into force on Saturday evening to curb the spread of coronavirus. It's the country's first nationwide curfew since World War II. Many say it's not necessary as cases of COVID-19 are falling in the Netherlands, with the lowest number of new infections reported on Monday since December the 1st. But the government is worried about a highly contagious UK variant of the disease spreading. The unrest started over the weekend when protesters in several cities looted stores, started fires and clashed with law enforcement. In one case, knives were thrown at police and a COVID-19 testing station was burned down. The events resulted in 240 arrests and thousands of fines were handed out for defying the curfew. Earlier on Monday, Prime Minister Mark Rutte condemned what he called the criminal violence of the weekend.
What we saw has nothing to do with fighting for freedom. We didn't take all these measures for fun. We did so because we are fighting against the virus, and it's the virus which is actually robbing our freedom.
Schools and non-essential shops in the Netherlands have been shut since mid-December, following the closure of bars and restaurants 2 months earlier.
That's Flora Bradley Watson of Reuters. Thousands of people gathered in Sydney to protest against the mistreatment of Indigenous people in Australia as the country marked its National Day on Tuesday on the anniversary of the arrival of the British First Fleet in 1788. Libby Hogan of Reuters reports.
With rap lyrics calling Australia's National Day Invasion Day, thousands of people gathered in Sydney to protest against the public holiday on Tuesday. The date is a sensitive one. January 26 is the anniversary of the arrival of the British First Fleet to Australia in 1788. And for many Indigenous Australians, it marks the start of mistreatment of Indigenous people in Australia.
Power to the people!
For elder Auntie Shirley, it brings a sense of grief.
This country is, was and always will be Aboriginal land. White Australia is, was and always will be a penal colony.
Every year, protests have grown, calling for the date to be changed. On Tuesday, some held signs saying, "Walking on stolen land," and chanted, "Always has, always will be Aboriginal land." Others took a knee. For protesters like Tara Dryden, the day was about showing solidarity to Indigenous Australians.
January 26th is rooted in Australian history. It's a stain on Australian history, and it's time we make a movement for it. It's not the date to celebrate.
Authorities warned protesters that they risked arrest if they defied state COVID-19 health orders to limit gatherings to 500 people. But in a last-minute compromise with police, thousands were allowed to gather in socially distant groups in the Sydney Park as their annual march was called off. A handful of protesters were arrested, but the protest was largely peaceful. Organiser Gwenda Stanley was proud to see the overwhelming turnout.
But to see the amount of turnout here today was absolutely amazing and wonderful to see.
Meanwhile, Prime Minister Scott Morrison said Australia Day represents how far the country has come since the First Fleet arrived, and told a ceremony that, quote, "for better and worse, it was the moment where the journey to our modern nation began."
That's Libby Hogan of Reuters. The International Labour Organization reports tentative signs are emerging that the world will be on the road to recovery this year from the massive job losses brought on by the COVID-19 pandemic. However, the ILO cautions the recovery will be slow, fragile, and uneven. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Latest ILO projections for 2021 show most countries will experience a relatively strong recovery in the second half of the year as global vaccination programs kick in. However, ILO Director General Guy Ryder says this optimistic scenario assumes the pandemic is under control and that consumer and business confidence is good.
But even in this case, we expect global working hour losses will continue throughout 2021 with a gap of 1.3% compared to the end of 2019. And that corresponds to 36 million full-time jobs. And in the Americas, Europe and Central Asia, those losses would be somewhat higher, around 2%.
While signs of recovery are encouraging, Ryder warns working hour losses will continue throughout this year and beyond. He says financial and social distress for millions of people will not be over. The ILO chief notes the latest analysis of the impact of COVID-19 on the world of work confirms how massively the pandemic affected labor markets in 2020.
This has been the most severe crisis for the world of work since the Great Depression of the 1930s. When comparing with the last quarter of 2019, we now see that 8.8% of global working hours were lost in the course of the year. And that is the equivalent of 255 million full-time jobs.
Ryder notes this is approximately four times greater than the number of jobs lost during the 2009 global financial crisis. The ILO reports the majority of these job losses were a result of people dropping out of the labor market because they were unable to work or because of pandemic restrictions. In many cases, it says, people just gave up and stopped looking for work. The report says massive job losses resulted in a loss of $3.7 trillion of global labor market income, or 4.4% of global gross domestic product. It finds women and young people are those hardest hit by the pandemic's labor market disruption. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Supporters of Britain's exit from the European Union said it will offer economic opportunities outside the EU. But 4 weeks after Britain finally quit the bloc at the end of 2020, many businesses say they are facing significant disruption and extra costs. Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
Fish played a big role in the brinkmanship leading up to December's Brexit deal. Under the agreement, a quarter of European boats' fishing rights in British waters will be transferred to British boats over the next 5 years. Not good enough, say these trawlermen in Cornwall, southern England, who claim Prime Minister Boris Johnson promised them full control over British waters. Phil Mitchell is skipper of the fishing boat Govanek of Ladrum.
We're worse off than before Brexit, because it's all written in that we won't be able to get it back. And it's just a travesty. Boris the betrayer has completely sold us down the river.
Nearly half of fish caught by British boats is exported to the European Union, a trade worth over $1.8 billion in 2019. But Brexit has brought border checks, paperwork, delays and costs. Several export firms staged a protest outside Parliament this month. Alan Miller is owner of AM Shellfish, based in Aberdeen, Scotland.
Live shellfish, it's not sell by date, it's live or dead. It's unless the government do something, a lot of these businesses will be finished.
Prime Minister Boris Johnson insists the problems will be ironed out.
Teething problems, people not filling in the right forms or misunderstandings. And when it's not people's fault, of course we're going to compensate and to help out, and funds have been put in place to do that. But be in no doubt, Nick, that there are great opportunities for fishermen across the whole of the UK to take advantage of the spectacular marine wealth of the United Kingdom.
But it's not just fish that are floundering. Other sectors warn of significant disruption. New tax rules have prompted some European retailers to stop selling to British customers, while some shipping firms have paused their cross-channel operations. But for other businesses suffering amid the coronavirus pandemic, Brexit has so far brought costs and little benefit. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
The COVID-19 pandemic is inflaming an already severe crisis of inequality across the globe, according to a report released by aid group Oxfam International. Lebanon, now ravaged by economic, political and health crisis, must enact drastic reforms to survive, economists say, to address its own huge homegrown income inequalities. Dave Gavlak reports from Amman.
Nasser Saidi is a former minister of economy and trade in Lebanon. He told the Malcolm H. Kerr Carnegie Middle East Center recently that Lebanon has the third highest debt-to-GDP ratio in the world and is in need of extensive economic restructuring.
If you look at other countries that have been in crisis, Greece, Argentina, Iceland, this goes way beyond that. We're seeing real GDP declining in 2020 by about 20%, had already declined by 7% in 2019. So this is a massive depression, even greater than in the 1930s, and the Great Depression.
Saidi says billions of dollars of Lebanon's stolen assets need to be recovered. Also, sanctions such as those under the Magnitsky Act can help, particularly if the U.S. and European Union coordinate their efforts to help Lebanon get back on track. Saidi says Lebanon's corrupt politicians and business elite need to be held accountable for what they've done to bring the country into such a dire situation.
They've effectively destroyed Lebanon. They're now holding Lebanon hostage. The politicians in Lebanon will feel the bite. And particularly as you start getting perhaps the beginning of a dialogue with Iran and telling Iran, you've got to hold Hezbollah back and let's get the reform agenda moving in Lebanon.
The international community has demanded Lebanese leaders form a new government to enact long overdue reforms so that billions of dollars in promised aid can be released. But so far, Prime Minister-designate Saad Hariri's attempts to form a cabinet of nonpartisan specialists have foundered due to rival factions jockeying for key ministerial seats, as well as rifts with President Michel Aoun, a Christian ally of Iran-backed Hezbollah, the country's power broker. Meanwhile, Lebanon's central bank governor, Riyad Salama, has denied allegations that he, his brother, and an assistant have transferred $400 million to Swiss banks. Lydia Assouade of the Paris School of Economics says that Lebanon's political and business elites have divided the country's public and private sectors between themselves, creating a system in which they can extract rent on virtually any economic activity. Producing the first estimate of Lebanon's national income and wealth distribution since the 1960s, Assouade found that the richest 1% of the Lebanese population receives 1/4 of the total national income, while the poorest half gets less than 10%. Concerning wealth distribution, the richest 10% owns nearly 70% of total wealth, while the middle class and poor have little chance of upward mobility. Without radical and immediate reform, she warns, Lebanon will become a failed state. Dale Gavlak for VOA News, Amman.
Estonia's new two-party coalition government has been sworn in, with the first female prime minister since the Baltic country regained independence in 1991. The 50-member cabinet of Prime Minister Katja Kallas, a 43-year-old lawyer and a former European Parliament lawmaker, was approved Tuesday in the 101-seat legislature. The centre-right Reform Party, chaired by Kallas, and the left-leaning Centre Party, which are Estonia's two biggest political parties, clinched a deal on Sunday to form a government. The previous government collapsed due to corruption scandal. That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great day.
Stay informed and up to date Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 UTC with VOA's International Edition. Our correspondents bring you the news from around the globe, plus we delve into the context of the day's biggest stories with interviews with experts that place the story into context to understand why it matters. VOA's International Edition, your best source for news